this is Natalie Rodriguez. I'm the writer, director, as well as one of the producers on the upcoming young adult film, The Extraordinary Ordinary. It's about three college students and their history with mental health. And if you want to find out more details, as well as some my own personal experience with anxiety and maybe some ways to cope, definitely check me out on the Dope Science Show.
Hello, welcome to the Dope Science Show with Stephanie Lowe, a.k.a. Science Steph with Steph. Thank you for your ears and minds. I hope that the show sparks new ideas, new opportunities, and conversations. I want us to learn and grow. We are all curious, innovative, and experimental in our daily lives. We are all dope scientists.
Hello, hello, you guys. Welcome to the Dope Science Show. You know who this is, Stephanie, a.k.a. Science Steph with Steph. And I'm super excited because today we're going to talk about film and anxiety and just like some mental health topics that are always on the top of my mind. And I have the pleasure to share this conversation with Natalie Rodriguez. She is an up-and-coming filmmaker, based out of Southern California, and I've been following her for a while on her journey for making her first feature film. So I'm really, really honored that she reached out to me so that she can share her story and talk about the film on the podcast. Welcome to the show, Natalie.
Hi, Stephanie. Thank you for having me.
Yes. I'm so excited. It was good talking to you last week, I think. So I've been looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, likewise. It's always good to kind of chat before we definitely get going on, like, the work side. So thank you, too, for, just always staying in touch. I mean, that's what's thankful about Instagram and social media is kind of you get to, like, build new relationships and friends and just kind of see what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, definitely. I'm starting to better appreciate social media for the connections I've made. So that's how we definitely connected. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself, Natalie? Tell them where you're from. I know your area, but they might not.
Yeah. No, of course. I grew up in Inland Empire, which is like 20, 30 miles out from Los Angeles County. I grew up in a little city called Walnut, California, which is, if people know what Pomona is, it's like 10 miles south from Pomona. And suburbs, always was around suburbs my entire life. So definitely like entertainment, TV, film was like out of the question with my parents growing up. But over time, I just loved movies. I loved TV. I was such like a huge fan of, think of the one film. I was a huge Wes Craven fan, you know, Scream. And then I became a fan of like American Beauty. So I was watching like films that weren't, I think, necessarily age appropriate, but it always kept my interest with getting more involved, getting on set or getting on a studio lot in general. And I think because of living in the suburbs, I bounced around from from Walnut to Diamond Bar, California to then Glendora. I think living at a distance from LA, it definitely just kept me like motivated to make sure I got out to LA once a week. And then as I like started, I think I wasn't in school anymore, college, I would then like make it two times a week, three times a week, every other day. So I think that definitely, I think, got me more involved with just like collaborating. And I just kind of like snowballed from there. Just, I think, always kind of setting a goal and just kind of like building and building as I like reached those goals. And yeah, other than that, that's a little bit like how I got started, like kind of doing like the TV film side.
Very cool. I relate to your story because I am from the IE too. Yep.
Yeah. I know.
The Inland Empire, right? The suburbs, and you know, wanting to be a storyteller, a filmmaker, and it's like your eyes on LA because that's the the closest hub for this, and so I definitely relate to your upbringing and things like that. What would you say makes you stand out as a person? Like, if someone to say, you know, what would they say, Natalie? Like, she's known for?
It's always an inside joke. I wouldn't say my purple hair, but that was a bad one. I think definitely, I think it's persistency. I mean, I think that's something I've had a few friends and colleagues tell me, especially I think now, like, as I become, like, I'm becoming like real close friends with a lot of my colleagues, just because if you spend so much time in development with them on a project or on set, I mean, you're with this person more than you see your family because you're trying to get a project completed. But I think it's, I would say persistency, because a lot is they'll see where I live and they're like, oh, well, you do this commute. Like that's like an hour, like hour and a half.
Right.
I think it's definitely, I think it's, I've always been like, that's pretty cool. Cause I think it's, that's always been one of my goals, is to just like not give up. And if it gets difficult, that's when I think you just either you take a step back to like breathe and just kind of like figure out or reroute your, I guess, direction to that goal, or you just thought out, just keep going and just kind of push yourself to just like not completely stop. So it's always been, I think it was interesting. One of my colleagues was here yesterday actually for the film that we were editing, and she mentioned that because she did a drive from Sherman Oaks, which is like 2 hours for where
yeah.
I live. Yeah.
So maybe people would describe you as super resilient, like super driven.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess, yeah, definitely that. Which I think that's always, I mean, that's always like, I think a good trait to have, just something I always worked up to. And sometimes as like a kid wanting to go on a movie set.
Yeah, your reputation precedes you. I expect people expect good work.
Mm-hmm.
Are people ever, like in your regular life, when you're just out and you're talking about what you do and what your passions are people surprised mm-hmm. when you tell them that you're a filmmaker?
Yeah. No, I think especially because where I live, it's like, oh, why aren't you in LA? Or why are you doing that as a career? That's not a career. So I get a lot of the, I'm sure like many other I think filmmakers or whether you're behind or in front of the camera, I think it's always jarring because I think now that I'm getting older, a lot of friends, family are like, "Are you? How's that Hollywood thing going?" So I'll get a lot of those questions. And I think it's just, they think it's cool sometimes that like, oh yeah, I remember as a kid you would talk about TV film and it's cool. You haven't given up yet. I think it's just a little jarring for, I think maybe someone like the general public, someone who has no interest working in TV, film, or music, entertainment industry in general. So it's always, I think it's interesting because then I think when those worlds collide, we do the question game of, oh, how are you not in entertainment field, or why you are in entertainment field? So I think it's always like we're kind of confused. You're like, why are you pursuing your industry?
Yeah. And what do you say? Like, for instance, you've made this film, your first feature film, right? That called The Extraordinary Ordinary.
Yeah.
And when you tell people you're a filmmaker and they can't see why, or they question your validity or you know, your right to do something like that, or it's just a surprise to them. And you have this film coming out, like, why were you motivated to be that person who's working on this passion project? What was so special about this film?
This one in particularly, I think is just the awarenesses that we talk about. I think I've always been bothered by like a lot of the stigmas that come with mental health, and that's from a little of my own personal experience with mental health. And I think at the time when I was going through like a lot of anxiety, kind of wasn't spoken about yet. It's like they would usually, I think in schools too, it was almost like unheard of, like, why are you nervous or why are you feeling this way? And then I think the awful feeling was sometimes asking yourself, yeah, why do I feel this way? When in reality it's just, you know, something I'm having a hard time coping with this, or I'm just having a hard time coping with multiple things right now in my life. And I think there's just like nothing to be ashamed about. So I think with the film, ironically, I was writing the script in college, one of the earlier drafts, and I was starting to have a lot of like anxiety experiences myself. So I was like writing the film about mental health and then experience in my own life. So I think that's always definitely held it close to my heart, because it was one of those, I was just like, oh my God, this is just like ironic timing, and kind of like the universe is like kind of almost like paralleling my life with some of the stories. Lines that go on in the film. And I think it was just meeting the right people. It was one of those scripts that I would always like take to workshop classes that I did after graduating college. And a lot of people like weren't fond of it. I think a lot did understand some of the, I think maybe the techniques or the coping mechanisms that were like I was writing about in the film. And I think it was a lot of the stigma that I felt were being like deemed on, especially the main character. Mm-hmm. I think most people, they affiliate anxiety with, oh, why is she happy in this scene? How come she's not depressed like throughout the film? And I think I kind of those comments would always make me, I'll be honest, like I would get like mad. I was just like, oh, so someone has a mental health disorder or experience can't be like happy. I was like, that's like, so I think that's just like the world's biggest stigma and cliche like that we hear, I think, ongoing, I think even today. So I think it was just that drive to kind of almost be like, you know, I want to bring the story to life. I'm going to find the right team. I'm going to find, you know, the people who are like on the same page as me. And I think with that mindset, it definitely, I think I was able to tell who not to share the script with at the time and who to like send the script to. And that eventually led to getting one of my first cast members involved. And he plays the dad in the film. And it led to me like doing a table read. So by the time I did the table read 2 years ago, I just kind of pulled like from some friends I've met in classes, college, and that kind of, I mean, I went really well. And I did something that was like really like scary because I was like doing it on my own at the time, trying to figure out how to get like a feature made. I mean, it's so, I think such like baby steps, like through the process.
That sounds like an amazing feat, actually.
Yeah.
You know, you're in it. Yeah. So for you, it's like, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is what the film's about. This is how we did it. But really to listening to it, you know, it definitely sounds like you were inspired by your real life experiences with anxiety.
Yeah.
And then you know, found a creative outlet to share your story and talk about it and work it through. And then it's like you've brought this to life, you know, as a this piece of art that we can all like watch and interpret. And I wonder, like, as a filmmaker, when you see everything edited, all the work you've put into this and your story and coming, you know, telling this, what would you want the audience to feel and take away from this after they watch your film?
Yeah, no, it's definitely a great question. I think especially, I think in general, it's so rewarding to see the film finished with a short web series or a trailer even. I think with this one, especially that now my editor, he actually sent us a first cut, so I'm picking out my favorite scenes with my producer. I just think it's just, I mean, I'm so proud of the work. I think just of everyone that's been involved, you know, the cast, the crew, and I think there was like, we were such on a crunch time. So I think definitely for people to see that, you know, it is possible to make a film with your friends and colleagues, you know, nothing's impossible, especially I think making a feature. You can make it happen. You know, you pull the tools and resources that are available to you to make it work. And I think also too, just people to see like, you know, there's other stories to people who have a history with mental health or still do get, still have a mental health disorder. And that's what the film touches upon. It's three college students that have experience with anxiety, depression, even grief. But in reality, it's, you know, once I feel it's something that I learned through my own personal life is, you know, once you feel something, it doesn't like necessarily go away. If it comes back, I think as over time, it becomes more manageable to like control, where things such as, you know, therapy or even medication or, you know, meditation itself. And I think that's something I hope people take away is that, you know, because if you have anxiety, because you have depression or you have history with mental health, it's nothing wrong with you. One, two, you can still can, you know, pursue your dreams. And three, you know, I think that's something that, hey, it comes back for people. And when it comes back in people's life, you know, it is possible to like still overcome it. It's not going to destroy your life. It's not going to like overcome you, even if it seems like it does in the moment. So I'm hoping people see that. It's just, it's definitely, I mean, you can have a quote unquote normal life with anxiety, depression, or if you're just going through like a rough patch in your life, it's, you know, it's okay to like take a step back and like just take care of yourself, especially.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really great. I I hope people take that away after watching the film. Is that where you is that what inspired the title, The Extraordinary Ordinary?
Yeah, that was actually a working title in college. I had to watch a film called Ordinary People, which it's a film from, I think, late 70s. And so Timothy Hutton, he plays like a teenager with a history of, I think his is depression, and it talks about like suicide awareness and kind of like the grief awareness when you lose a loved one. And I always wanted to call the film Ordinary People, but when I found out about that film, I was like, oh, shoot, like the title's taken. But I think The Extraordinary Ordinary, that always was something I played around with. I was thinking maybe I'd call it Extraordinary People or Ordinary People, even if it's the same title. It's just like it's been 30 plus years, I think, since Ordinary People came out. But then I just thought, what if I just use both words in the title and just kind of throw it around and see how that works? And it just kind of stuck, to be honest. It's one of those titles I was like, oh, I'm going to change it once we start filming. And then when I did it happen, I'm like, oh, I'll probably change it once I get to post. And I think it's just something we, I think people like, because they're like, oh, it's interesting. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
But it's also the title of a poem of that a character writes in the film. So it's one of the characters named Bianca. She's a writer, a poet, and it's a lot of kind of the meme behind the title. Like, as I was writing the script, like each draft, it sort of the title started making, I think, more sense to myself that, you know, they're, you know, your everyday people, but that's what makes them awesome. And that's like a lot of the themes that Bianca, the character, the protagonist's best friend, that becomes her best friend throughout the film. It's kind of like how she lives with her life is, you know, bad things happen every day. You know, bad things happen in our life, but you know what? We're still like here. We're alive. I mean, we're still awesome and cool. And that's kind of like a lot of, I think a lot of that is coming from that character and sort of teaching these two other characters or two other protagonists like how to live by that motto.
Awesome. I'm sorry. I'm like, I don't always have a good vocabulary reaction. So I'm like, that's awesome.
Oh, you're great. No, no worries. You're great.
Well, I am looking forward to it. I hope people talk more about their just mental illness more openly and not feeling so ashamed or like this. I know it's sensitive and I know it's private, but it would be great if people felt like they can talk more openly, like you would talk about any sort of physical illness or something that's visible for people. I have anxiety. I've had anxiety, I think, since I could remember. My first, I've talked about it on the show before, like my first memories are just being anxious. Like, I'm just was a highly anxious child growing up. And there's so many different reasons why someone may have anxiety. It could be from an environment. It can be genetic. It can be, you know, related to like an actual physical condition as well. Or stimulus from like chemicals. I get anxiety when, like if I take caffeine, like I tend to be edgy and more susceptible to having anxiety, you know? And for and there's different coping mechanisms that I've used, and I'm always looking into it as far as therapy or medication. And I just looked at this quick article because I always try to see how can I tie in like science with my conversations. And one of the articles I read was on Science Daily, and the title was Meditation could help anxiety and cardiovascular health. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting, you know, because people don't think about what the physical repercussions on the rest of your body when you have anxiety. Like people tend to think it's just like an emotional thing. And, you know, there's real life consequences for sustained anxiety because it's stress. And, so basically, to summarize, it was this study that was conducted by a team from Michigan Technological University. The lead researcher, his name was John DeRocher, and they presented this at a a conference in San Diego this year. And basically, they presented a study where they found that after 1 hour of like focused meditation, the subjects or the participants saw a, and they all had lower resting heart rates and reduction in like the, I don't know how to pronounce it, but basically their heart was just in a healthier state, to summarize it.
Okay.
And this lasted for weeks after, like weeks, and after only 1 hour. So people think of, oh yeah, meditation is daily, which is ideal, but it brings up the idea or of, it's just like you would say, for instance, go into the hospital somewhere for a treatment this 1 hour. Like it opens up the eye of the concept of under the care of an expert or after being properly trained or having a therapist of 1 hour of like focused meditation on your body and your mind. Like you can dramatically reduce the level of stress that you have from anxiety, which affects your heart. So I thought that would be cool to share just because it's like, this is life, but you also want to always have ways that you could, for self-care, you know?
Yeah. And it changes too for self-care. No, I mean, I meditation, that's something, and the coffee thing, when I think I first started going to a psychologist, I learned that's what, I kind of learned like what a psychologist really did and a psychiatrist, because I think my biggest fear, and maybe it's just, I think it's just, maybe it's always like a personal, I think a personal fear of mine, it was more like I never wanted to take medication for anxiety. And I don't know why it scared me, but I think there's just, I don't know if a lot of it just came from, I just didn't want to like take medicine. And I made an appointment by accident with a psychologist because I was trying to get a psychiatrist at the time. And my psychologist, I actually been seeing on and off for 5 years. And I think she's always given me that, you know, that out, you know, if you need to go on medication, like, you know, it's okay. Like you can, like I can send you to a referral, but then you can still come back here. Cause she's like, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to kind of like give you more coping mechanisms, how to, you know, deal with it or how to like cope if you want to get off medication at one point. But I think that's what's been interesting. Cause she mentioned the medicine side, and then with coffee, she mentioned that too. She was like, how many cups do you drink a day? And I think I used to drink like 2 to 4 cups a day. And she, her response was like, yeah, don't do that. Like maybe try to cut back, stick to like one a day and spread them out more. And no, it was amazing because I was like, coffee, really? And like, I've been drinking this since I was like 15, 16. And I think we figured that could have been, I think from my personal experience, the trigger to like kind of heighten anxiety over time was, I think she said, you know, high school, many start to develop, you know, anxiety. And so again, in college, she's like, it skyrockets because you're in block classes, your schedules are like 10-hour school, hours of schoolwork. And she's like, you know, of course you're running on little to no sleep, and then you're drinking this caffeinated. She's like, why are you, like, your heart's going to, you know, it's going to go like out of control, and why are you going to feel, she's like, very like just run down. So I think I'm learning that, and over time it was, I've done everything like yoga, meditation, even to cardio. So I think it's always changed. I think just more from a personal taste, where I was one time I loved doing yoga for X amount of months, and then I was like, I like to move on to cardio. So I think that's also like the beauty of it too, is I think if you're able to change your coping mechanisms or something else, you know, interests you to try, I think that's, I mean, it's one of those, there's never like a right or wrong answer how to cope with, I think, your mental health. It's whatever makes you feel, I think, safe or is able to give you like some clarity. I think that's what I think tends to be like the right choice to do at that moment.
Yeah, I think I agree. I feel like it's just don't ignore it. Like, you know, just try to accept it and be, I think from my experience, being aware of triggers helps a lot. Like the caffeine, I know, for instance, sleep deprivation or being sleep deprived will trigger it for me. As far as even for me, just chaos, like if I have, I'm sensitive to a stimulus. So if there's like too much noise, too much going on, and it's causing me to not be able to focus, you know, like I'm trying to focus in a chaotic situation, it's like too much for me, and it can trigger anxiety. There's all kinds of things to trigger anxiety for me, the unknown, it goes on, like driving. But what have, beyond exercise and knowing my triggers, there's these really cool, what do you call them? It's like these virtual therapy sessions you can do where you can like pay a monthly fee and you get to so many hours with your therapist via text or Skype. I found that to be helpful and affordable compared to seeing a traditional therapist in-house. And most recently, I've tried a CBD oil, which is like hemp oil. I'll put the link if people are interested. And for me, that was like a dramatic difference. I didn't feel as CBD or hemp when they I don't know how you say it, but when they extract it into this this form, there isn't any THC in it. So THC is what you feel when you say, oh, I'm high from like weed or marijuana. You don't have that. So you just feel like a healthy, normal person. I don't know how to describe it. It's like really hard to describe, but it's like you don't feel extra calm. You don't feel sedated. Yeah. You just feel like, wow, I'm just like in peace with myself. Okay. So that's been really helpful for me as well. So I thought I'd just talk about that openly as well.
No, that's interesting. Essential oils has been, that's been, I think, such a lifesaver. I think it was my mom. I think that's one thing too, because I think when I first was having anxiety attacks, like extreme, I was living at home still. And I think, of course, I go to school, come home. And I think my mom, she was trying to understand what was going on. And she reached out to one of her work friends, like who's very, I forgot what it's called, where they don't take any medicine, but I think it's holistic. They don't believe in any medication. It's all like herbs and like natural remedies. And essential oils was, I've been using that like on and off for like the past 4 years. So I kind of understand what you're trying to say. It makes you feel at peace or calm, or just things seem less chaotic, or you're able to work your way through it, like at your own pace without feeling like the world around you is like speeding up or, you know, it's not slowing down with you. But I definitely, I recommend essential oils, lavender. That was one that I think they specifically make for anxiety or, I definitely think you're feeling anxious. And I love it. I think it's very like soothing, and they smell nice too. So it's definitely like something I think people should incorporate in their life. Give it a try for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I think people should just be open to trying different things. I'm not, of course, I'm not the FDA. I'm not making any sort of like prescriptions, but it's good to share stories so people can figure out and experiment with themselves. I love a lavender for, it's like one of those super things, like they're super herbs. I'm a huge fan of lavender for any sort of allergic or skin reaction as well, because it's like a very strong anti-inflammatory. And so is CBD. It's a very strong anti-inflammatory. And so I think from what I've read, that's related to anxiety and stress as well. It's just having me or just some other people, there's brain inflammation from physical conditions that CBD treats. And lavender works similar in the way it works as well. So I definitely recommend people trying it, or at least like looking into it if you're interested. So that's helpful, because when I'm listening to your story, I'm like, okay, you're stressed. And you created this work of art, and then you went through this entirely stressful experience in order to make it. I mean, being a filmmaker is stressful, even though it's fun.
Oh, yeah.
it's good to hear that you had some coping, mechanisms to get you to that. In spite of all that, or in addition to all that, I was wondering, how did you, finance and make this film happen? How did that happen?
For me, I think as you can imagine, entertainment, a lot of jobs are freelance work. So I was very fortunate that About a year ago, I worked on a TV show that my mentor was producing at the time, and it was filmed at the CBS lot in Studio City. And I think with that, we got paid very well. I'll be blunt. I mean, we got paid very well because, I mean, we were working long hours, and it was a daytime talk show, so we were filming, like, oh, God, I think it was like 10 episodes within a month, which is realistic for, like, a daytime talk show. If you turn on, like, The Talk or The View or I think it's The Real, you know, they film an episode each day, but they also have a staff of, like, 100-plus more people. So the workload's not intense. So I think the workload's intense. That's why they sort of, like, up their paid. And I think over time, you know, just working and saving, and I think just I've always been, like, working just from the moment, like, in college, getting out of college, you know, was going, like, from set to set. And then when I started doing freelance writing, that definitely, like, I started getting incorporated in my life, too. If I wasn't on set, I was freelance writing, or vice versa. If I wasn't freelance writing, I was on set. But I think it's definitely self-funded. I mean, definitely can do it on what I could do. And I think that's also what made, I think, a good challenge with making the film was, this is what we were able to afford. All right, how could we shoot this? How could we, you know, make this happen with, I think, because realistically, I think a minimum budget for, like, most films is an average of 10 mil, which is a lot, I think, to the outside public. But in, I think, entertainment land, 10 mil is considered an independent feature film, just because 10 mil, I mean, if you add in, bringing in, like, a lot of, I think, actors, you know, a little more like celebrity status. I mean, they cost, I mean, their pay rates can go up to like a mil to two per film. So I think, you know, I think that's what made it a little stressful because, like, realistically, if I had a little more money, I could do this and that. But it was also, I think, what I learned from taking a lot of classes after college was, you know, nothing's impossible if you have the, it sounds cliche, but the right team. Someone, if they're passionate about the project, I mean, they'll, you know, take a deferred paid, or, you know, they won't ask for anything. They just want the credit. So I think I was very lucky there because I think with this one, it, I think a lot of people resonate with it because it deals with college students. And most of us, my crew, we were in our mid to late 20s, 30s even. And I think it was it was an amazing experience, but kind of scary because I think I didn't realize a lot of the people that are involved in the project have, you know, a history with mental health, or they, someone close to them has anxiety or depression. And I think it was just a lot of people just resonate with the script and I think just the story. And I think, I mean, that's where I think I really definitely, like, lucked out. I think just people want to tell the story. And I think that's what made it not realistically, I think, cost so much. Because I think people, we kind of were aware that when you're, like, independent filmmaker, you're self-funding your material until you're able to get what they call is investors and executive producer to come on board and bring in money for the project, which I think realistically that's how it's been going with feature films. It's you want to be a writer, you just sell your script, or you find a director or a producer to attach, you know, talent and crew to it. But if you want to write and direct, it's, I think throughout college, a lot of my mentors sat me down and said, make your film and come back to me. And I kind of never knew what they meant by that until I would reach out to them and would keep in touch. So I think definitely kind of with this experience, self-funding this, it's been rewarding because I do think you get to stick to your, what you want the story to say. And especially if you want to keep it, I think, true to the script, or if there's things that, like, your cast members improvise. I mean, I think you have the creative say, you know, how you want to, like, the story to go and develop and, like, flourish, like, through the screen. So that's, I think, the flip of that. I mean, it sounds scary because I think a lot of my friends, they asked me the same question, like, how did you make it? And I think once I told them, I was like, well, you know, I kind of took the advice a lot of my mentors told me and, I mean, sat me down and said, I think you need to really just, like, make this, because they knew, like, I think how much I was so passionate about mental health itself. And they're like, kind of gave me the scary talk of, you know, scripts getting changed, especially if you're not already established in the industry. It's like, I guess there's a saying that's unheard of, that a writer director will kind of get their first feature to look the way it does without them sort of putting their own money into it, or having investors who are like their family or friends, like, helping them out. So I think it was definitely what it's experienced, and it sounds so stressful, and I think it's, you know, I'm going to say that to like scare any other like up-and-comer filmmakers, but I think it's, I really feel like if you're so passionate about a script you wrote and you're like, I have to tell this story, I need to direct this, I need to produce it, because I feel if I share it with anyone else, it's going to, the message is going to like go away. I think self-funding is definitely the key. And you don't need, I think, 10 grand or all this money to make it. If it's doable on a grand, it's doable. It's just, I think knowing where you draw the line with bringing on cast and crew, you know, if they have a certain pay, it's just, I think just that too, just being upfront with them, saying this is all I can offer. I understand if you got to walk away, but, you know, sorry, it's just, I can't go over that rate, or we're filming this on these dates only, so if you're unavailable, I need to know now. So a lot of it, I think it almost kind of forces you to, it forces you to be like, I think, more of a producer, because it's definitely knowing where to kind of cut corners or where to like cut, I think, draw the line. Mm-hmm. If, you know, there's a certain cast or crew member going to work with, but you're like, I need to also get this done on an X amount of timeline. But I mean, honestly, it was reward experience. I mean, I think looking back, I mean, even though it seemed stressful at the time, it definitely, I think, pays off, because I definitely am a firm believer of, you know, the universe. We had cast members dropped out because schedule, or I think payment even wise too, I'll be honest. And I think, you know, I used to like bum me out, but I was like, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, trust, when situations happen like that, it's not necessarily personal. It's just, you know, something maybe the individual doesn't want for themselves, or I think, you know, you find the right person to like come on board like midway or right before, you know, you start filming, which happened a lot with this one. It was, I think, because we were such on a time crunch. So it definitely, I think, encourages us to know when to say no or when to say, yes, let's go this way. So it's a little bit about that. Sorry, I was like going on a rant, but I think it's definitely, you know, making a film, it's not easy at all. I mean, it's also fun, but there's also bumps on the road. But I think every creative project, it's going to have it. It's like a roller coaster. It's going to have it ups and downs, and you're going to have your bad days, and then you might end on a high note where you're like, oh my God, everything's like great because that last take was like amazing. But I think that's just the reality, is just, you know, just kind of rolling up your sleeves, and I think just definitely, you know, being prepared for, you know, the worst to happen, but also like, you know, kind of expecting the worst, but, you know, also like, you know, not thinking kind of like, I don't want to say like Debbie Downer, but, you know, just being prepared. Yeah. Like, I think, yeah. Stay in between that, things are going to.
From what you said, I mean, from what I've taken away, it's basically, you know, passion, man. It's like you're passionate and you're just focused on getting it done. And it wasn't this big project that was looming. Yeah. It was more like you just chipped away at it. And then it just kind of like, you know, developed as you went along. And one key thing I heard you say was, you had mentors. So it seems like having mentors, having a passionate team, and and having the mindset to be able to budget and negotiate as you went along so that you can self-fund, seems like those are the three like key things that I got from what you were saying that any aspiring filmmaker, you know, would use. Yeah. And everything else is like whatever it takes.
Yeah, no, definitely. I always wonder if that could be like a blessing or like a bad thing, because I think with art in general, I mean, we end up being our first financer, producer, and I think it's just because a lot of things has changed. I mean, we have YouTube, we have Vimeo, we have you can text, you know, videos to your friends, like, here, watch this little short I made. So I think with more of those outlets, everything's become so independent or contract work, where you can be your own boss, or you can just make content, and there is a market, there is an audience, you know, if you can't, like with film, if you can't screen in a theater, you can put up on YouTube, or, you know, there's so many options, which I think is great. But, you know, I think I'll be honest too, with, I think the film side, it changes consistently, where I think it's like 1 minute, it's, you know, you're being encouraged, pitch your first feature that you write, but just don't direct it, write it. Or there's nowadays, like I mentioned, they're like, oh no, you should probably just fund it, as high as you can go with your budget, but fund it and then just change the script if you need to like accommodate with locations or if cast members, how many you have. So I think that's like, it's, I think it's, again, like it's ups and downs, but I think it is getting better over time. I think with like entertainment, it's just, I think it's the more people are creating their own content and they're showing, hey, you can make a feature on X amount of a budget, or, hey, you know, I'm a first timer. I've never had my first feature. I've never won awards, but I also believe in this project and I think it's, you know, worthy to take a look at. So I think definitely, yeah, staying, I think it's persistent. I mean, if you're passionate and persistent, it keeps you up day and night, I think that kind of gives you your answer that you just got to get up and do it.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. You guys got to just get up and do it, and a team,
yeah.
Man. You just have to, you do have to have a team. You have to be open and to building these relationships. You mentioned earlier when we were talking that, you know, your crew became like family. So it's not just this turmoil. It's just, you know, it's part of making art.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think that's the good part too, is like rely on your team as well. Especially being my first feature, I think with shorts, it's not uncommon that whoever wrote the script ends up directing and end up producing. And I think with this one, because of the feature, it's like, I mean, realistically, it's like there's only so much that I think each team member can do because we're human. I mean, it's, sometimes we'll come to set and it's like if you have enough sleep, just your brain, like, you know, you're just, you feel fried out or you're just thinking about something else. And that's why it's just key to rely on your team, or don't be afraid to ask for help. I mean, I think I definitely learned that on this one. It was, I mean, I think, but there's always a stigma with directors. It's like, no, you need to have everything together, you know, otherwise you're a bad filmmaker. And it's like, well, realistically, no, you do, things change, like locations fall through. So there often goes your shot list. So you got to almost improvise, you know, you kind of turn to whoever your right-hand man is. And I think for directors, it's your DP. And of course your talent, but because we did a lot, we filmed the feature in definitely long take, so it's told from the perspective of the main character. And a lot of that we decided to do from a creative choice was because I think Mother, the Darren Aronofsky film, came out about like 2-3 months before we started getting into pre-production with the feature last year. And it was told from what I was informed, I haven't seen the film yet, but from Jennifer Lawrence's character's perspective. And I'm a very Aronofsky fan, so a lot of like the long takes I'm a fan of, and we keep it from that, kind of limited our shot list. So a lot of it was like kind of our DP dancing around a lot of the actors, and then me kind of like falling behind him. So it was, I think that kind of gave us, that's what made the film, I want to say possible, the film, is because we did like run the camera and it was almost very like theatrical. Kind of like blocking was you follow the actors and kind of improvise. We sort of like played off of like, you know, if they moved this way and not that way, it was sort of us being like just prepared like for things to come up during a take. And I think that's why, you know, rely like heavily on your crew, because I think it's sort of, you just got to trust each other. Otherwise you just can't. I mean, I think then it's hard to like get through the day to make the film itself or the project in general.
One thing I wanted to ask you real quick was, you said you crowdfund. What platform did you use, and can you give us like a quick snapshot of, you know, what that experience was like for you, and one thing you would do differently?
Yeah, and of course. We used something at the time that was called Seed and Spark, and similar to Indiegogo, I think Indiegogo is, I think, more filmmakers have used because it's been around a little bit longer. But same thing, Seed and Spark, we tried that about, I think, like last October, November. And that was an interesting experience. I mean, we ended up not making our goal amount because it was, you have to make, I think it's 80% of your asking price. But I think something with that is, I think what we definitely learned was, you know, we didn't have to ask for such a high amount because we were thinking, I think in terms of like pre-production and then production and post budget. But I think if you do a crowdfunding page, I think you can just do for feature. I would say, honestly, I wouldn't ask for anything, I think, over 10 grand. I think because mostly the general public, I think from my personal experience was a lot of people didn't understand, I think a lot of the self-funding route, whether you're putting your own money down or you're solely looking for investors outside. I think it was we got, I think for Arm, we got more confusion. A lot of it was, it looks great. Can't wait to see the film. And it was sort of like trying to, I think we were learning like how to sort of pitch it with a crowdfunding page, not a kind of like a movie website link. But I think they're great to use. Definitely, I think for like budget for a film, like for pre-production, especially if you go SAG, you go SAG-AFTRA union, because then you get into legal, or you have to hire lawyers, or you hire an attorney to do in order for SAG to like waive your film and put you in the system. Or, you know, I would do it for a post-production thing. You know, if you need money to raise for post, I think kind of the more product you have to show, I think that's what makes a crowdfunding page a little more successful, because mm-hmm. I think people like to see visuals. They don't want to read. I mean, I think it's just, it's one of those things you learn. I think in general, it's like a writing or a film doesn't capture in the first paragraph, the first 5 minutes. It's, I think nowadays they said like the human brain will automatically like focus on something else. So it's like, I think crowdfunding, I think of the same way, is the more, I think, footage you have, the more visual posters, cast members' faces, you know, the characters' names. I just think people get excited, like, oh, I like this look, or hey, I know that girl, I know that guy, or he looks familiar. It just, I think it's people more talking. So I think it's crowdfunding, definitely think great for pre-production, or definitely like post-production financing, for features at least, my personal experience with using those.
Very good to know. Very good to know. I have a bucket list myself. I want to make a short film one day. I've been saying one day is forever. But I've already written part of it. So I'm always asking my filmmaker, so tell me about your experience.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's so different, though, too. I mean, I've had friends do crowdfunding pages like Kickstarter, Indiegogo, asking for like 10 grand, and then they get like 20, 25 grand. And these are for shorts too. So I think it's just definitely, I think for me, that's one thing, I think because we didn't make our money there. I think the one thing I got, I was so disappointed, like, oh my God, the product can't sell. But I think that's one thing, like, people need, like, definitely keep in mind is that, you know, if the crowdfunding doesn't work, there's so many other options. And I mean, nowadays, I think there's contests, there's grants. I think definitely going to as many networking events as you can. And there's many, there's not even like, they're not necessarily all in Los Angeles. I know San Francisco, I think Palm Springs, you know, there's so many events that go around. So I think definitely that's key too, is just like networking and meeting other people too, you know, who are looking to, you know, do their first feature, or, you know, you'll meet a lot of producers there. They're up and coming producers who were once like assistants, and they want to meet other people who are like about to go head first, you know, dive into the feature film. And I think it's, that's why networking is just definitely like key. I think, you know, top end the phone with people, emailing, I think it's just always meeting other people and just kind of, you know, definitely, I think asking people like, how'd you get your start in the field? I think that's always something I think I've always done from when I was in college, because I was just always like curious, like how a lot of my bosses got where they were. And especially if they were like from out of state, I was like, oh, they didn't grow up here. So I wonder like how difficult that was for them to like pack up their things and just move out. Where I think that was a little more fortunate, because I don't live that far from LA. And I think my family like always kept it in between Inland Empire and Los Angeles County. Cause I think as I got older, they knew I wasn't going to change my mind with wanting to go into TV film.
Cool. I have one question. Are you a fan of science fiction?
I am, yes.
I'm like, so what's your favorite science fiction film? I know that could be hard, but off the top of your head.
Let me think. I guess, I mean, this can count maybe a little bit, but I think I grew up with it. I always want to say E.T. I think because it's a lot of like the fantastical element. It might not be like a hardcore like sci-fi. Yeah, I think it's, I just grew up watching that, and I think my earliest memory was watching Scream and then E.T., and those are like the two most random films out together, but I think because my mom, I mean, whatever my mom watched, like, I would watch, and E.T. was, I mean, it's always been her fan favorite, and Spielberg I knew from the time I was like 4 or 5. I think definitely E.T., because it's one of those films, I think it's like feel-good film, and it's just so tragic at the same time too. I think it's one of those, like, I think almost like near perfect films. Like, I just think it's like a great story and just beautifully like told.
I agree. I think E.T. is one of my, I don't always list it as one of my favorite movies, but as a kid, like, that was a standout film, you know, E.T., seeing the aliens, and I think I remember being shocked, just like the kid was, you know, when you first saw the alien, because I had never seen an alien before. You know, it's just a beautiful film, so that's super, super cool. I love science fiction. Do you think you'll ever produce anything in science fiction or write anything?
Oh, I think so. I think it's just, my taste, I mean, they change, and I think films are, like, merging, they're becoming subgenres, so it's, like, it starts off as an action film, but ends up, like, as a, like, the romance story, like, is the bigger storyline. So I think so. I think it's just a matter of time, and I think, again, like, timing, I think it's, if I don't write it, I think definitely, like, producing one, and I think it'd be fun to do. I think that's a, definitely just kind of branching out to different genres, but also, like, I think you always, like, stick to your roots. I mean, I always, I've been writing, like, dramas for a while. So, like, Sundance, and it comes out of IFC, Tribeca. Those are, like, the films I'm like, oh, my God, yes, this is, like, something I run to go see. But sci-fi, for sure. I mean, I think it's Christopher Nolan's, like, one of my favorite filmmakers. And he kind of does, like, the subgenres with sci-fi and, like, action. And I think of Interstellar a little bit with. Yeah, kind of.
What did you think about Interstellar? I'm sorry to interrupt you. I always ask people, it's science fiction, but I swear I felt like it was a love story. I felt like it was still a love story between, like, the dad and the daughter, like this, like, familiar, you know, family love.
I mean, I really enjoyed it. I think because it was that, I went in thinking Christopher Nolan, like, Dark Knight, because Dark Knight's one of my favorite movies, too. And I was picturing, like, action, but I think I was shocked by that, because I'm like, oh, no, this is, like, really, like, family drama. Like, I mean, these are the stories you kind of would see, like, coming out of, like, Sundance, where it's, like, the family drama, the dynamic, who gets along, who doesn't. So I really thought it was, like, tied in really well, like, with the story, which I think that's what made it, like, made it stand on its own feet, because it wasn't your typical, I hate saying this, it wasn't your typical, I guess, sci-fi action-adventure film. It was, you know, there also was, like, you know, the core of the story. I thought it was a great film. Definitely, I think that's why I've just been a fan since, like, the moment I saw Memento. I think it was just, I think his storytelling is just so, like, it's enriching, and it's just so, like, I just think it's so, like, different from, like, a lot of filmmakers' work you see.
True. I love, just, like, I'm a big fan of any film, and just anything that seems new and I haven't seen it before, I'm totally open. There's Sorry to Bother You that just came out.
No.
Have you seen that already? I'm going to see that this weekend. You have to see it.
I haven't.
You have to see it. I'm going to hype this real quick. It's super good. It's sci-fi, but it's like comedy, like a dark comedy, and then it's still like social commentary as well. And I won't watch the trailers, because everyone said it's like a really bizarre movie, and I just want to be surprised.
Okay, yeah, no, Sorry to Bother You, I think I didn't know who the director was at first. One of my colleagues, his client's actually the main guy, Lakeith Stanfield. So I remember hearing when Lakeith, he was one of my favorite films, Short Term 12, when that first came out of like Sundance and the film festivals. I think it's kind of cool, because I think that's how you realize how small the world is. I think I remember Lakeith hearing about him 3 years ago. He was always trying to get, like, leading roles. And I think Sorry to Not Bother You is, like, his first, I think, like, kind of blockbuster lead. So, no, I think it's kind of cool, because I'm like, oh, I remember hearing about that, like, through Brett. They were, like, talking about how he wanted to, like, kind of branch out. So no, I definitely heard great things about it. And I think I love the cast. I mean, Tessa Thompson, you have Armie Hammer. I think it's just, I'm with you on that page too. I, like, don't want to read any reviews or try to avoid, like, a lot of things coming out. But no, it looks amazing. I think he described it as a filmmaker as, he had, like, this amazing pitch on, like, a TV spoof. It's a TV promo. It's like a two-sentence, like, pitch, but he says it's like a comedy that turns into sci-fi, realism, fantastical, and you're like, wait, what? Like, what does that mean?
I'm like, I don't know, but I'm totally open, you know? I'm totally open. I want to make sure everyone, when your film comes out, The Extraordinary Ordinary, I definitely want to have you on again and just do like, hey, you guys, don't forget, you guys know me and my film is out, like a little catch up.
Yeah.
And I want everyone to just have a chance to see the film. I'm looking forward to it. I have some clips
you.
That you shared with me. Once it's okay to share things, I would like to share it as well online.
Definitely.
So we can get just more eyes on your stories.
Yeah, no, definitely will. For now, people can definitely check out like some behind the scenes stills or behind the scenes, like we had a photographer on set and as well as stills that our DP was able to color on our Instagram, Facebook page. But yeah, definitely within like the next 2 to 3 months, we'll be having a trailer coming out so people can start kind of seeing like the story come to life.
And where can people find you and all the information about the film?
No, of course. You can find us at, it's for both our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram account. It's The Extra Ord Film. And one word, all lowercase, and you'll be able to find us there. Same username and for all three platforms.
Perfect. And I'll also have everything in the show notes for you guys, so that'll be easy
awesome.
To find.
Yeah.
Cool. So I do this thing as well where you you pick the soundtrack for the show. So if you tell me one song that you'd like to be the soundtrack for the show, I try to ask people on the spot because I like to be mean, but if you can't think of it,
no.
You can also let me know later. But if you could think of anything right now, that'd be cool.
Like a soundtrack? Are you talking about genre or like existing
just
like
one
music
song
or?
Off the top of your head that
one
you'd
song.
Want to be on this episode?
Oh, let me think of it. Oh, okay, I like, just because I hear their song in commercials, it's The Naked and the Famous. I believe it's called Youngblood. They play in like a lot of like, I think like they played in Degrassi. That's where I think I first heard it. And then the Target commercial. They're like a little, I think, indie band that came out from like Connecticut. I'm probably like off on where they're from, but definitely that song because it's kind of like hip. It's like very like young and I just think it's like a cute song. I listen to it if I go for walks or go running or just even write as well.
That's cool. I love it when people, I always ask this question because I like to discover new music. So this is my way of like doing that.
No, awesome. I'm like the same way. I grew up with classic rock. So I'm like, I'd love to like hear different music that I feel like always should be bigger. But then you're like, I don't want you to get too big because I want to like be able to like keep the band to myself. but no, definitely give them a go to listen. I think you'll definitely like their music. It's very catchy. It's kind of like Empire. I think it's Empire of the Sun. They're a little different. Yeah, it's almost like can be like electro. I think like a few years ago, I think it was like electro pop was like a. I think just was like blowing up. I remember just I think being in high school, I was like all like the students listening to. So it's kind of like in between that and I think like indie rock. So it's. I think that's why I like it because it's like they don't really stick to one genre. It's like they sort of rotate.
That's awesome. Cool. Was there anything else that you wanted to like cover on the show that we didn't talk about or any questions?
I'm glad we did talk about like a lot of kind of like our own personal history with it and kind of talked about like how it helped, what helped us. I feel like pretty good about it. I mean, is there anything, feel free to fire away with any questions if you need more info on anything.
No, I feel great about it. I just always want to make sure that I'm getting everything that you want to say across.
No, I think that we seem to cover a lot. I mean, I'm really like happy with, we talked about a lot of things for sure.
Cool. Well, then this is the end of the show, Natalie. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes, for sure.
Well, I hope you guys enjoy the show. That was Natalie Rodriguez, director of The Extraordinary Ordinary, upcoming indie film. I can't wait to see it. You guys keep an eye out on their feed so you can see the promos and teasers. And let's support indie film, you guys. I really love it. Are any of you guys indie filmmakers? Or do you have a favorite independent film? I'm always looking for suggestions, so hit me up. And we talked a lot about mental health and anxiety, so I wanted to make sure that I include some mental health resources in the show notes, so you can check that out if you guys are looking. Myself, I mentioned that I have anxiety, and it's something I deal with every day. In fact, I had a lot of trouble getting this episode out for no reason except for anxiety. It makes my procrastination worse, you know, like, I'm not sure if that is my body's way of saying, hey, you need to relax or slow down or take care of yourself, and that's why I kind of shut down when I get anxious. I'm not exactly sure, but that's why we have the mental health resources in the show notes, but I thought I would just be honest. I did come back from Washington, D.C., you guys. That was a great trip. I'll talk about that in the next episode, like a catch-up episode. And then you'll see a little bit more about why I had anxiety. But at least it was a really good trip. Like, super successful. Totally worth my time. Hopefully, I will have made some life-changing new friendships. I'm super optimistic. Sorry if I sound a little sick, because I am. If you guys want to check out the music at the end of the show, the song is called Young Blood by The Naked and Famous. You can, if you're listening to this episode on Spotify, I believe you hear it, or if you're listening on the Anchor app, you'll hear it as well. This is the only way I can include music without having to worry about copyrights and things like that. So let me know if it works, and I could listen to myself, but let me know if you guys like music, or should I just cut out music altogether? And I hope you guys have a good week, and I'll try to talk to you ASAP. Peace. Thank you so much.